coming to you from the top of the SmartWorks Tower. Nestled between the massage parlor and donut shop in beautiful downtown Red Bluff, it's the PenPals.Buzz podcast. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
I recently read a book where a man was sentenced to die, but he wasn't told when the execution would be taking place. And in the meantime, he was allowed to just go about his life and live normally. He didn't know if he'd be executed maybe tomorrow, the next day. Maybe it'd be a month or two, might be 20 years. He just didn't know. And so the real punishment here wasn't the execution and the death itself, but it was the constant fear that this man had to face each and every day of his life, looking behind his back, afraid every time he'd hear a noise. Is it going to happen now? Is it going to happen now? And that fear is something that got me thinking when I heard recently that we had scheduled Brian Drips, who's our guest today on the podcast. I thought maybe Brian could have possibly shared this feeling of fear for the 23 years that went by without him being arrested for the murder that he committed. Now, Brian, for those of you who don't know the story, was recently, in 2019, in fact, convicted of the rape and murder of an 18-year-old woman named Angie Dodge. Crime happened back in 1996. Now, from 1997 until 2017, for 20 years, another man, his name was Chris Tapp, he was wrongly convicted of the rape and the murder, and he spent 20 years in prison, wrongfully accused. And during that 20 years, our guest today, Brian Drips, he lived his life. He had a family. He had a job. He was going about his day-to-day life, and I wondered, maybe he was experiencing that same type of fear that maybe today's going to be the day. Maybe tomorrow I'm going to wake up and they're going to be outside my door. Maybe when I go to work next week, they're going to be there waiting to arrest me. I wondered if he felt any of that, and I guess he did just to a small extent, but that went away shortly after the crime occurred, as he was, I guess, able in his mind to just compartmentalize it and move forward and forget that it happened. But we're going to hear from him and hear his story in his own words here in just a minute. I know he's been on a lot of the show, you know, Dateline 2020, lots of other shows, and I guess in one of the shows, the producer was yelling at him and telling him he's a liar, and they edited a lot of things out that he said. He wants to tell his story, his version of what happened, and we promised him we wouldn't edit anything, and we'd just let him say it the way he wanted to say it. So he'll be here on the phone with us. And after the interview, stick around because there's a very surreal ending. If you think the story itself was bizarre, you've got to hear the ending about what happened to Chris Tapp, the man who was wrongly convicted and finally released. What happened to him? What happened to his wife? Did he get any money or didn't he? We'll tell you all about that, but you got to hear this part of the story because I feel like the story is just beginning. It's been going on since 1996. I feel that we're going to be learning so much more about what is really going on here. It's an action-packed episode. We're going to try to fit it all into 30 minutes. I hope we can do it. Brian Drips should be here any minute. He, by the way, is also a new member, a new lifetime member, in fact, of PenPals.Buzz. So if you want to learn more about him, the stuff you're not going to see on the news, on Dateline, more about what his hobbies are, his interests, the things he likes, his life, his background, see some pictures of him prior to the time he was arrested. You can do so at penpals.buzz/inmate/Brian-L-Drips, which is D-R-I-P-P-S, or you can just search for him on our homepage and it'll bring up his profile. Maybe you want to write and ask, what the hell were you thinking? How could you have done this? Maybe you have questions of your own, you want to get in touch with him, or maybe you feel bad for him and you want to be there as a friend. He's not going to be getting out of prison. He's got some health problems, and doctors have all said that he's probably going to be dead before he'd even have the chance at parole, which would be in 17 more years from now. So let's get right into it now. On line three, holding should be straight from the Idaho State Correction Center in the beautiful town of Cuna, Idaho. Mr. Brian Drips. Can you hear me, Brian?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Thanks for calling in.
Yep.
Guess we should get started.
Alrighty.
You were convicted just about 5 years ago of murdering Angie Dodge. It happened back in 1996. Another man named Chris Tapp had been wrongfully convicted and served 20-ish years for the crime that he didn't commit. And then ultimately, with the advancements of DNA and a cigarette butt, you were ultimately caught and convicted. Yeah. And you had told us that, you know, you've been on Dateline and 48 Hours and 2020 and some other shows, but they're always telling the story from their point of view. And we wanted to give you an opportunity to tell the story the way it happened, straight from your mouth and, you know, without editing or changing the facts around.
Well, basically, the day of the crime, it was a long day, but a friend of mine, you know, his brother was in town, so he wanted to show his brother a good time. So we ended up proceeding, doing a lot of drinking, and cocaine was involved. So we ended up doing that pretty much all day long, and then closing the bar down that night, staying after the bar closed. And then we went back to where I lived, which happened to be across the street from where Andy Dodge lived.
Okay.
You know, on the way home, we were walking, so none of us would get in trouble for driving. Sorry, my voice is a little cracky. We'll have that in the dry air, you know, lovely air we breathe in here.
Yeah.
But the, you know, we got stopped by a peddler even, you know, and he was giving us a hard time about being drunk in public and this, that, and the other. But I was like, wow, you know, really, we're trying to do the right thing, you know, not drive and, you know, run somebody over or do something silly like that with a vehicle. But anyway, we get back to my place and finish off the beer and what little coke we had left. And finally, my buddies call a cab, and the cab shows up, comes, picks them up. And I'm there kind of nodding off. And I finally, like, you know, get one of them, you know, F it moments. Because I'm still tuned up with the cocaine.
Right.
You know, what have you.
Uh-huh.
So I went across the street. And, you know, my intention was just to, you know, unfortunately force myself onto the poor girl.
Okay.
And she just moved in, I think, you know, that summer or something like that.
Okay.
You know, I haven't lived there that long myself either, because at the time, you know, I was married, and I came home from work one day, and my ex-wife now, but anyway, she had packed up the house and left.
Mm. Mm.
And she was pregnant with my first child. So.
Oh, man.
But she left one day while I was at work. I mean, yeah, she took everything, even the roll of toilet paper off the dispenser, man.
Oh, no.
But, yeah.
How, so was this just so shortly, anyway, just shortly so, before this crime happened? Did all that happen with your ex?
Yeah. It was. So, and there was, you know, well, I'll talk about some of that too, because some of that kind of, to me, was a trigger point with what happened, you know.
Yeah.
It had to. 3 days prior to everything that happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
There were some other things in my past too that I, you know, feel that, you know, should have been sort of a trigger point, but not according to the so-called psychologist I had with, you know, a whole bunch of alphabet soup behind her name, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, they all seem to think they know people better than we know ourselves, it seems.
Yeah, we know ourselves. Oh, I know. I know it.
You were heading over there, and you were going to force yourself on her, and then what happened ultimately? Things just went south? Or
I don't know, because I don't remember that part of it.
Okay.
You know, and to this day, I still can't remember. I sit here almost every night trying to remember that night. You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, she was almost decapitated, you know, and all I had was a pocket knife with me.
Wow. Do you remember, you know, you remembered coming back that night and walking home. Do you remember thinking about walking over there?
Oh, I remember going over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember sitting in my living room, you know, nodding off. And then I was, like I said, I you know, basically said, F it. You know, I'm going to go over there and, you know, force myself upon this girl. And that's basically was my intent to do. And like I said, all I had was a pocket knife, a 2.5-inch blade, folding pocket knife that locked.
Yeah.
So I went over there. I remembered parts of, you know, the, you know, forced sex, but I don't remember, you know, anything else. I don't remember part of part.
Yeah.
And I've tried to remember that, but I just can't. I don't know. I know the mind's a pretty powerful thing, and something, you know, that traumatic, maybe it just shut it out or what, but I don't know. But I remember going there. I remember bits and pieces of the rape part.
Yeah.
And I remember leaving.
Mm.
Now, the thing that gets me is, you know, if I would have actually, you know, I'm not saying I didn't, you know, I was there. I will say that, you know, I'm not going to deny that. But if I would have actually done that, you know, like I said, she was almost decapitated.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was on top of her. If I would have done what they said, you know, cutting, you know, that violent of a deal, I should have been covered in blood, basically.
When you woke up the next morning and, you know, you'd sobered up maybe a little bit the next day and you weren't covered in blood.
Yeah.
So what were you thinking that morning? Was it one of those?
I wasn't.
Well, I mean, the next day when you were.
Yeah,
were
but
you,
I wasn't covered.
Did you wake up, though, kind of in like a what the hell happened yesterday feeling? Sort of like if.
Well, yeah, I did do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then especially when I saw, you know, the police car sitting out front.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, wow, what's going on?
You think, you know? I mean, based on that, somebody else could have murdered her after you left that night? Be a jealous ex or something? Is that
maybe
what you're thinking?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe, I don't know. You know, I hate to speculate because I really have no clue. You know, I mean, I wish I did have some answers, but I don't, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I really don't. And the funny thing is, you know, the cops, you know, said, oh, it must have been one really brutal battle up there, you know, and this, that, and the other. Well, if there was, why wasn't there more DNA? You know, I had long hair at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't there hair evidence? Why was it just the semen and one pubic hair DNA evidence? You know, that was all they found for DNA evidence. Why wasn't there a blood trail? I mean, dripping blood leaving their place if I did do the murder, you know, of almost decapitating the poor girl, because my hands would have been just saturated, you know, realistically, with the small blade that I had.
No, that's...
you know, why was that?
Good questions, for sure. What day or when, if you remember, Brian, did you finally know for sure that she was, in fact, dead? Did police come questioning people? Did you see a coroner over there? Was there a time that you remember that... You thought, oh, crap, she's dead?
Well, later that afternoon, because I went and met up with the guy that I was with, and he told me everything that happened. He told me, you know, how bad she was cut, and this, that, and the other. And I was like, wow, really? You know, I didn't, you know, that was the first time I heard of
was
anything
he,
what,
was
about
he,
that.
He was telling you based on stuff that he saw, or was he actually there? Was this just on the news?
No, there was nothing on the news.
Hmm.
So he was getting information. He said he was getting it from, I think he said his wife or something, but I don't know.
Huh.
But he was telling me everything that day, how bad she was cut, you know, and this, that, and the other. And I was like, wow, really? And, you know, it was all news to me. And another thing was when I did finally go in for questioning, you know, I told him everything. I said, yeah. Well, I didn't tell him, you know, I went over there, obviously, but
right.
I did tell him, you know, that me and my buddies were out drinking and, you know, having a good time, and a cab came, and, you know, I told them the names of the guys I was with. But the detective at the time didn't question the cab guy. He didn't question my two friends I was with or nothing like that. So it seemed kind of odd. And the report that the detective took didn't write an accurate report of what I told him. You know, he just basically wrote one sentence that says, yeah, he was out partying and came home and passed out. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not 100% sure of the words, but that's basically what it said, you know. And then in 2019, the detective did question my one friend that I was out with, but the guy ended up lawyering up when he went in 2019, which seemed kind of odd, you know. I mean, if he had nothing to worry about, why did he lawyer up?
When Chris Tapp was arrested and ended up getting convicted, what was going through your mind at that point? I mean, he did those 20 years and you were doing your thing, living life like a normal guy out in the world. Did you think?
I didn't.
Did you ever think, oh man, he's doing a sentence I should be doing? Did you think maybe he actually killed her, or did you just try to block it out and move on?
I had no idea they had him locked up until 2016 when Dateline aired.
Oh, wow.
Okay. That one episode. So, and then when that's the first time I ever heard his name was in 2016, you know, when the Dateline thing happened.
Yeah. So even without that, you had at least thought that maybe you raped her, maybe, you know, you remembered some parts of being there.
Yeah.
And then once you found out she had died, I imagine for at least a while, you were probably a little nervous, like looking behind your back a lot, hoping that they weren't going to come get you.
Yeah, I was a little bit, you know. I mean, especially if I got, like, pulled over or something, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Made me a little bit nervous, you know. It's like, oh, man, I mean, is this it, you know? Yeah. Is this a straw? But then after time went on and, you know, I ended up, you know, with government security clearances and stuff like that, because I had Homeland Security clearances to work at airports and escort people, you know, behind and around security clearances and drive on the tarmac and stuff like that. And then I had even DOD security clearances to work on military bases and things like that. So, you know, and after time went on, it's just like, okay.
How long would you estimate?
I kept wondering what's going on. Is it just a cold case or what? You know, and it's not like I was hiding out. You know, I was in the public eye, basically, or not really the public eye, but I mean, I was here in Idaho.
Some people were asking, and I was just curious, how long do you think that was from the time, at the time you were finally able to let your guard down and relax and not be worried that someone was going to come arrest you? Was it like a year? Was it longer? Was it a month? What would you guess?
I really couldn't say. I guess I'd have to guess, because shortly after all that happened, my ex-wife did get a hold of me after she had our first child. She wanted to get back together and stuff like that. And, of course, I agreed to it. Because all I ever wanted to be was the family guy and the dad. And I was so into that at the time that I kind of put all that, I guess, in the back burner. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't really think about it until, you know, something came up to where, you know, I was in a position where authority was asking me questions, or I was being stopped for something, you know, like that. And then it would kind of sneak up in the back of my mind, and I'd think about it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, is this the time that, you know, something's going to happen with what happened in 96 or whatever. So
you were a good dad, and I mean, you raised three kids. I think you wrote to us that your youngest recently turned 26, and now you're a grandpa.
I'm going to be an uncle too.
Oh, wow. Congratulations on that. You know, we were looking, as we were setting you up on penpals.buzz, we glanced at your Facebook, and I mean, we saw there was a lot of love there with your friends and family, and you know, 6-7 years ago, before this arrest happened, and it was kind of it was bittersweet to see that from our perspective, because you weren't some at that point in time, you weren't this monster that they probably were painted out to be by so many once they arrested you, but you were just a guy that had a family and loved the mountains and had spent time, and you were in the Marines, is that right, back in your younger years?
Yep.
You had gone scuba diving in Philippines and gone down to 90. I mean, that was some fascinating stuff, and I think it's
90 feet.
I think it's important that people, regardless of what did or didn't actually happen that night, like it's good to see who Brian really is as a guy.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I do, too. And, you know, like I said, it was a mistake. You know, I mean, we all make mistakes. I just happened to make a really big one, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I wish I could hit that redo button and redo that night all over again. But unfortunately, there are no redo buttons.
No, I know that for sure, unfortunately. When you were ultimately arrested, what was the reaction from your children, your ex-wife? Did they not even believe it? I mean, I'm sure they were stunned, right?
They didn't. Well, my kids didn't believe it. My ex-wife, you know, she started saying, oh, I knew it all the time until somebody called her on it, you know, and said, well, why'd you leave your kids with such a bad guy? And then she retracted everything she said, you know.
Are you still in touch with your kids? Do they keep in contact?
Oh, yeah. I actually get to see my one grandson and youngest daughter Saturday.
This is a weird question, Brian, but are the jalapeno cheeseburgers still in the vending machine at visitation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was always the...
That's what I have every time. That's what I get every time because I get a visit every week, you know.
Yeah.
I take on every week.
What's your life like otherwise in there? What do you do kind of on a daily basis in the prison?
Well, I'm a TA for... That's down in education for the GED, one of the GED teachers. I do that through the week, and then on weekends, I spend a lot of time reading, actually. And besides that, I do a little bit of drawing, but I haven't done much lately. I mainly do it on, like, Christmas time and holidays. I'll make cards and send them to the family.
I know you wanted to go back a little bit more to some stuff from the past that might have been triggering, if you want to talk about some of that.
Yeah, because there's, like I was saying, you know, there's something that happened, you know, 3 days prior to what went down that night, you know, on the 13th, you know, and then, you know, some stuff that happened when I was 10 and then 16 again. Stuff that happened then, you know, but it's still weighed in my subconscious, I guess you could say.
Like it was building up, you know, one thing after another just built up, maybe.
Yeah, and what it basically was, you know, when I was 10, I was molested. And then 16, I had a gun stuck to my head, my temple. And I can, you know, remember that like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
But then 3 days prior to all this happening, like I said, all I wanted to be was a dad. I just wanted to be the family guy, be a dad. Then I came home that one day and everything was gone, even the roll of toilet paper on the dispenser.
Well, oh, man.
3 days prior to what happened that night, she gave birth to my first child. She gave the child a different name than what we picked out. She gave the child her ex-husband's last name. And she was even going to put her ex-husband on the birth certificate until her lawyer said that she wouldn't be able to get any child support out of me if she did that.
Mm.
So she put me on the birth certificate. You know, and with all that, you know, and then being pretty messed up, you know, 3 nights later on the cocaine and everything and alcohol and, you know, and then I got into the effort mood. And so I went across the street and I guess I took out some of the frustration that I was feeling for her and for a girl across the street. I don't remember doing what I did. With almost decapitating the poor girl. I was there, so could it have happened? Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
I just wish I could remember, you know, because that's one of the things that drives me crazy every night, because I'll lay there trying to go to sleep, and I think about that.
I know the mind is able to block out so much different trauma, and I can imagine that could be one of those instances.
Well, and where, you know, that's not who I am, really, you know, maybe that's why I blocked it out. And then, like I was saying, you know, with the psychologist, you know, she knew about everything and all that stuff. And she goes, well, Yes, sir. I could see that being a trigger, but since you didn't have a history of torturing cats and other small animals, then, yeah, no, that don't apply. I just looked at her and like, what? So you're saying if I would have had a history of torturing small animals and cats, then, oh, yeah, that would have been a feasible thing or a viable thing, you know? And I'm like, that makes no sense, lady.
Yeah, you didn't really have any other history. I mean, you had some misdemeanors or something, right? But you didn't have much of a criminal past before all of this and not even after.
No, not even after. Anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah, and you're making the most of it in there and helping other people with education, so that's a good thing.
Yep. 1 minute remaining.
Have a good night, man.
Yeah, you too, man.
Okay, bye. Brian Drips, everybody. Idaho State Correction Center in the suburb there of Boise, Idaho. He's only been there a few years, even though this crime happened back in 1996. And that's because Chris Tapp is a man who was innocent of all of this, but he was wrongfully convicted of the murder and spent 20 years in prison until they finally realized through some DNA that, oh man, I don't think this is the guy. I don't think he's involved. And actually, they looked at some of the polygraph videos that Tapp was given where the polygrapher was threatening, if you don't fess up to this, you're going to get the death penalty and things of this nature. So they realized this false confession that Chris Tapp gave was completely coerced and illegally obtained. And yet still, when they knew in their hearts that he wasn't the guy that did it, they said, we'll let you out of prison, Chris. You've done 20 years, we'll let you out, but you still need to plead guilty to the murder. And some of you might think, oh, I'd never do that. I'd never say I'm guilty if I wasn't. But, I mean, you've been in there 20 years. I mean, I'd go on the record and tell people I was a caterpillar in a past life and that I like eating rocks and dirt from a beach in Miami. I'd say whatever it took after 20 years, and I think most people would too, so I understand why he did that. March 22nd, 2017 is the day Chris Tapp was released, and that was much in thanks to actually the victim's mom. Angie Dodge's mother really worked hard because she knew that this wasn't the guy. And she worked with the Idaho Innocence Project, who worked with the DNA, and everybody worked together, quite a team, to get Chris Tapp released. All right, so the story is basically just beginning now. So Tapp gets out March of 2017. Now, May 15th of 2019 is finally the day when Brian Drips is arrested. They've got the DNA. They found a cigarette butt. Everything matched up. They know this is the guy. 7 days later, May 22nd of 2019, Chris Tapp, the falsely accused one, he gets married May 22nd. And then less than 2 months later, on July 17th of 2019, he's fully exonerated now. They said, okay, I know we made you confess to the murder. We made you plead guilty to the murder. And we let you out, but now you're completely innocent and we're sorry. And as far as the court's concerned, you had no involvement in this crime. That was July of 2019. And he's been married now for 2 months. 3 years later, Chris Tapp's lawsuit finally comes through and he's awarded a huge sum of money, $11.7 million. He takes that money and he goes out and he buys his wife a brand new 2023 Corvette. Soon after she gets that new car, August 14th of 2023, at around 11:15 p.m., his wife drives the car off the road, crashes the Corvette, and is found dead. Weird, right? I thought so, too. I mean, the first thought I had at that point was, could that be related at all to the money? Could someone not want her getting the money? Or I don't know. That's just the first thought I had. And then I read more. 2.5 months after Chris Tapp's wife is killed in this car crash, Chris himself decides to go to a car show in Las Vegas. This is late October of 2023. He goes to Las Vegas and rents a fancy suite at the Resorts World Hotel, where they're having a Halloween party. And at some point, he meets a guy named Daniel Rodimer. Everyone's at this party, and Chris Tapp offers Daniel Rodimer's stepdaughter some cocaine, allegedly, at this party. This is all going off of reports. Rodimer finds out that Tapp offers her this cocaine, and he loses it. Now, let me tell you about this guy, Daniel Rodimer. He's not just a normal guy at a Vegas Halloween party. This is a retired professional wrestler, a semi-pro football player for the Tampa Bay Barracudas in the Arena League. He's retired from that now at this point. And he was a former congressional candidate in Nevada and in Texas. He was actually endorsed by President Trump in the 2020 election, just barely lost in Nevada. And now he's indicted on a murder charge in the death of Chris Tapp. He's out now on a $200,000 bond. His trial is set for February 3rd of 2025 after several continuances that have been going on. So he's out. They don't think he's a flight risk because he's a public figure and he lives in the local area there in Nevada. So at first people were saying Chris Tapp's death, he ended up actually dying 6 days later in November. And at first it was reported it was an accident. He fell down, he hit his head. But then more evidence started coming into play, and we're reading reports from some of the local newspapers, and his biggest problem appears to be his own wife and some text messages. Always bad for anybody to put anything in a text message if you don't want the whole world to read it. But apparently, Mr. Rodimer saw Mr. Tapp trying to give his stepdaughter cocaine, and he just lost it. Lost it, started beating him, started choking him. His wife, Sarah, was there and witnessed everything, and here's what Sarah actually texted. This has gone into evidence now, according to this report. She wrote, "I watched you nearly murder somebody, and I had to take your fucking hands off his neck as he laid there, and you ran away. Nobody should have to watch their husband murder somebody," she texted, and this is according to Fox 5 News in Las Vegas. So that doesn't sound great for Mr. Rodimer. He's also been charged in the past with multiple other assaults, but he's never been convicted. I feel like there's got to be more to this story. There's something we're missing, right? Tapp's wife dies in August. A couple months later, he himself dies in Las Vegas. And it's possible that it's just the money. It's possible that he had so much money and he was used to $80 a week on his commissary account. Now he's got $11 million. And just started partying too hard, you know, buying the fast car. His wife crashes the car. He goes, he buys drugs. He's living it up in Vegas, living that lifestyle. And it could have just led to both of their demises, I suppose. They say that money corrupts. Too much money maybe is a bad thing. Maybe he would have been better off and still alive had he gotten, say, $300,000. But could there be more to this story? Who gets that $11 million now? That's one thing I want to know. Who gets that money? Could somebody have had both of them killed somehow, hoping that they'd inherit the $11.7 million? I don't know. I don't know, but these are the types of things I'm hoping comes out at Daniel Rodimer's trial, who, by the way, swears that he's innocent, and his lawyers say they can't wait to prove that in court. We're going to have to wait at least 3 or 4 months till we get that information. But I have a feeling there's going to be at least one more bombshell that comes out of this story, which is just one of the most amazing, unbelievable, wild stories that I've ever heard about in this industry. You know, it's just sad all around. I mean, Angie Dodge lost her life. Angie Dodge's mother lived 20-some years trying to find who really killed her daughter. She finally did. Brian Dripps, now in prison for the crime, but it took over 20 years for him to get caught. His family couldn't believe it, you know? No, not Dad. Just devastation in this story. Chris Tapp gets out, then he's dead. Chris Tapp gets married. His wife dies. Tragic, tragic, tragic story. This is something truly stranger than fiction. Now, next week on the PenPals.Buzz Prison Pen Pal podcast, we're talking solitary confinement and how it's overused in America, in particular in Washington. We'll be talking to a mom of an inmate who's been confined in a solitary cell, a.k.a. ADSEG, segregation secure housing unit. They got these fancy words now. She's going to tell the story of how her son's been there, not for days, not for weeks, but months and months, and he won't be getting out until next year if he's lucky. We'll talk about why that's done and the harmful effects that that causes on inmates and ultimately on society. That's next Monday here with penpals.buzz.
It's lockdown time for Big Steve, but he'll be back Monday with another edition of the penpals.buzz podcast. To be a guest on our show, email podcast@penpals.buzz or call 888-2-PENPAL. PenPals.buzz is a division of Snaptura Inmate Services.